Hey, it's Peter here with my FSHD. Yep, here we are coming up on the end of February. Time is flying. Oh, God, was this only I think it's my fourth or fifth podcast of the year. You know, just been absolutely buried. I hate to be one of those people. Tells you how busy we are. You know what? Everybody's busy. I know that. And everybody's busy with stuff. And although we've been particularly busy with God, it seems like every morning starts out at sunrise having to clear the snow. We live, many of you know, we live in the mountains kind of northwest of the Sierra Nevada mountains, northwest of Carson City, Nevada, south of Reno. And I got to tell you, a little bit of elevation gets you a whole heck of a lot of snow. And man, I'm getting a good workout though, but holy cow. Oh my goodness, getting old, man. Looking forward to spring. So what's going on? Oh, you know what? Interesting thing today. I don't know why. I wake up at like 4 a.m. That's normally when I start doing some work and then go back to sleep. But I just happened to catch today in history, just a weird thing. You know, it's 1978 at the Grammys. The Eagles, Hotel California, did not win Song of the Year in one of the great back in miscarriages of justice in the Grammys, which they've continued to continue, right? That actually went to "You Light Up My Life" by Debbie Boone. Seriously, over Hotel California. Seriously. Anyway, you know me, I love song. Oh, actually, you know what? I'm not gonna play this for you because, sorry, my movies trump my music.
Jesus, man, could you change the channel? I had a really rough...
I'll flip this out and kick your ass out.
Man, come on, I had a rough night and I hate the Eagles, man.
That's right, the dude does not approve. The dude does not abide when it comes to the Eagles. So, well, anyway, it's the 70s. So one thing, it's been brought to my attention. We've been doing this about a year. And, of course, when we started this, we were pretty certain that outside of my mom, nobody would be listening. Maybe my kiddo Jenny. Well, I know my kiddo Jenny listens once in a while up there in Portland. Mom, turns out, is she doesn't tune in as often as I thought, which is cool because a lot of other people have been tuning in, listening to the podcast. But it's a little bit of a mystery sometimes to people, especially people that tune in late. From my perspective, I just figure everybody's listened to everything. I mean, the 1 through 60 or whatever we got there in the past year, there's about 60 of them out there. So when I talk, I sometimes figure everyone's kind of got all that kind of library of information in their head. And of course, that's kind of probably incorrect. And so, although there's some of you got it all, which is good. And so I don't go back over things. And some people, I guess, have been somewhat surprised by how the podcast goes. So maybe the tone of the podcast or the content of the podcast. And at least that's what I'm hearing. I guess a lot of you like to contact some of my colleagues and friends and say, "Holy cow, did you hear what Peter said today on the podcast?" And then I get my phone lights up and I'm like, "Yeah, well, whatever, man." So I thought I'd do a little quick reintroduction, resetting of what's going on in the podcast, just so we're all on the same page here. This is for FSHDers all around the world. And I know I got friends everywhere in the world, Germany, Switzerland, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, now in South America, and all across the U.S., up in Canada. That have been listening in. Oh, and by the way, and thank you all. I got to tell you, Carissa's, thank you all for buying Carissa's book. I guess, I don't know, it was appropriate for me to say thank you. CRISPR Evolution. We'll get to that in a second. But at least I'm getting credit from her for it. When every time she sells a book in a foreign country, she figures it must be because a podcast listener is doing it. We'll get that to a sec. So what is my FSHD in the podcast? Well, my FSHD itself was established in 2019 as a 501c3, which means nonprofit, tax exempt, not-for-profit in the United States. And I established it with the purpose of providing accessibility to our FSHD research testing to everybody across the US and around the world at no cost. And so it really, the idea was a portal website. And then started putting in a lot of information about the science. And the more science I put on, the more people seemed to like it and be interested. And it turned out there was a big gap, knowledge gap out there, but also not really because there's an information gap. I think there was a concerted effort by maybe, by the foundations, keeping you dumb. Yeah, sit down, shut up, and write your check. Right? Don't worry, trust in us type of thing. And that's just never, that whole attitude has never really set well with me, this idea. I think that the more you know, the better off you are, and that you really should be, you know, you need to sift through some of the garbage that's out there. I mean, there's just some of, I'm sorry, but it's just a lot of the information that's out there is wrong, useless, going nowhere. And then there's a lot of good information out there too. So I want to be, you know, whether it's Facebook or foundations or whatever, you just, the more you understand the FSHD genetics, the more you understand the epigenetics, the molecular pathology, the molecular mechanisms, the therapeutic targets, and the therapeutic approaches, the more you can start to kind of weed through the stuff out there and say, hey, this is just kind of, you know, a con job, or this is something that's maybe real that you'd be interested in learning more about and being able to support. So, you know, we grew into more of an information type of a combination of information about yourself, your own epigenetics. And if you want, you can look at the myfshd.org website and find out more about your epigenetics, or listen to some of the early podcasts. But also then information about the entire FSHD space. Okay. And even, you know, I'm a storyteller. I've always been a storyteller, long as I can remember. Everyone always, that's why people are surprised anyone listens to me. But I tend to, even when I used to teach at the University of Illinois, I'm always, it was kind of storytelling the way I taught it. Kids loved it, though. They actually got it. They were interested. I actually won a teaching award. So I think it's the only award I've ever won for anything. Was voted best teacher by your students type of thing. For a class on epigenetics, mainly because by having a discussion and real world examples and real research examples and real data examples, you know, you actually found that the students learned more and were actually engaged and actually had questions. It was great. It was actually a fantastic class. I actually loved teaching it. And it was great, but that's kind of where what I'm still doing. So actually this podcast in some ways is what it's like to be a student in my class, which is not, I guess, very non-traditional. We'd never had a textbook. It just was me out there just talking with the class, man, having a conversation, going over data, going over papers, making sure, you know, I'm designing experiments. Hey, let's design an experiment to solve this problem and stuff. And so, the podcast has kind of become, you know, all of that. Plus, since we've been doing FSHD research, I am a full-time FSHD researcher. By the way, I'm your host, Peter Jones. You know, we have a full-time FSHD research lab at the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine.
Well, I'm only the best because I work with the best.
And, you know, it's, I don't know, there's a dozen of us in the lab. We've been doing full-time FSHD research probably since 2008. We got into it in 2002. So 20 plus years of doing FSHD research. And we've worked with almost every, we've worked with people all over the world, all the foundations. And what do you want to say? We know where the bodies are buried. We know who we work with and who we don't. And we can give you some real life experience on what it's like to do research. Because the questions I get when I talk to y'all on Zoom meetings and phone calls, and I talk with people all around the world all the time. In fact, I got one coming up in 30 minutes here, so I'm going to have to cut out in a second. Well, actually, what I got, a 2 o'clock, a 3 o'clock, and a 4:30 today. You know, going over research test results with some of y'all, and which I love to do, but it's the questions we get are, you know, when are we going to have a therapy and why is it taking so long? And sometimes the answer is because of the, you know, making the sausage, man. And because a lot of groups that claim to be helpful aren't helpful. A lot of researchers aren't very good citizens in the field. A lot of foundations, well, actually a lot, some foundations are not good citizens in the field. And, you know, it's competitive. Anyway, I pulled the curtain back a little bit, maybe too much, on what it's like I mean, I just tell you how it is. This is what our journey has been in FSHD research, and it has been tough. We've almost been out of business multiple times, almost been shut down. We've been broke. We've had to mortgage our house. We've had we've been thrown out of I've been thrown out of two places, had another place go bankrupt, and we're still going. You know, with our eye on the goal, man, which is to get a therapy for a efficacious therapy for FSHD for the community. Okay. And so I just, you know, I'll tell you about the path. And you know, so the other part of it is that FSHD is just in some ways a very difficult disease to work on. And it's actually why I think that we do well in it is because, you know, some advice I got from my advisor when I was at NIH as a postdoc was, work, you know, low hanging fruit. They said, you know, that's what all the big guys go after. You know, they go after this, these low hanging fruit. And it's, you know, that there's a lot of competition there. Work on something difficult, work on something hard. You won't have as much competition because people just give up and fade off. And it's turned out that that's actually how what happens. A lot of people get in, you know, jump into FSHD research. They realize, holy crap, this is really hard, really complicated. Their program that they've been running on Duchenne muscular dystrophy or congenital muscular dystrophy doesn't work, and so now then they leave. Okay, so I like to, you know, part of it is to educate. Some of the people that are in the science fields out there about the complexities of FSHD, but also for y'all, so you understand. It's not that we're a bunch of idiots, although some of us are, but it's just complicated, and we got to develop tools, we got to do things. So you know, that's what my FSHD is all about. I tend to wear my heart on my sleeve. We take this very personally. We have we're a husband wife team. My wife Takako and I really have dedicated our professional lives to FSHD. Others in the lab, such as Carice Hameda, who is we refer to her as our CRISPR goddess. You know, she has also spent 12 years now working with us and has dedicated her professional life and all of our personal lives to FSHD in many ways. And we take this very personally. This is our mission in life, is to get therapies, whether it's us or to help others get therapies and other approaches to get ahead. And so that's really what we're all about. You know, and I guess one of the last things is we're reintroducing the podcast briefly. And I'm actually gonna talk after some songs, I'll talk about some music. I'll talk about some science. I'll talk about some science. All the podcast episodes are basically, you know, they're still valid, they're timely, they're timeless, I guess. You know, if you want to know about CRISPR, go back and look at the CRISPR podcast. You want to know about antisense or therapeutics, go back and listen to some of the early ones. You want to know about mouse models, you know, episode 4 is like the making of a mouse model. Recently, we've done the xenograft mouse model that we did with Bob Block. You know, these things are always, it's not like the news. It's, you know, where it's old news. It's always up to, you know, it's always actually still important today. Right. And so, really go back and listen to the older podcasts. You'll actually hear that the data, the information, whether it's talking about using melatonin in the lab versus a person, or the nutrition one with Tamara and Michael Gottlieb, you know, those are still good. You know, the Mark Tarnopolsky podcast, there's everything is still still, what did I say? Timeless? I don't know. It's important to know now, right? So if you're just jumping on the podcast in the past couple of weeks or the past couple of months, and you want to, you know, you think this is kind of how we do it. There's, you know, some are more scientific than others. Some are more about the journey, about foundations, you know, a little bit of everything in there, but check them all out. I am a bit repetitive in how I do these things, but I guess I've always had to be that way with FSHD because you got to hear it multiple times in order to get it. But check out the old podcast, they never go out of style. So, and keep in mind, I'm not a medical doctor and nothing we present is medical advice and should never be taken as medical advice. And it is, you know, it's as factual. My stories are as I remember them, and things are factual. Remember, I'm putting myself out here on a podcast. This is recorded. This is out there. nothing, can't hide from it, right? It's one thing for people to say something in passing, people get a phone call, talk about their opinions on the space, their opinions of research projects, their opinions of foundations. I'm putting it out there. So you know that I stand behind it and I believe it. And that is what I've, and the purpose of it, especially the criticism, is to make things better. I like to give props and let you know when things are good, let you know who's doing a good job, in my opinion, let you know who we have had good experiences with, and who I would support, and I do support, and conversely, who we do not support, who we have had bad experiences with, and who I would not recommend supporting. I try not to be too negative, but it's, sometimes it just comes out because we have had a number of negative experiences. But again, these are our experiences, and my, you know, I call someone an idiot, it's my opinion, although we could probably prove some of it in court if we had to. You know, I tell you some of my personal experiences. It gets you along, maybe too much about my person. My wife says I tell you too much personal stuff. And then of course, you know, growing up in the '80s and I always put in my '80s music. Classic '80s music, '80s music you haven't heard yet. Maybe you just haven't, you know, some underground stuff. I tend to stay away from the really popular stuff. You know, I love Queen, love my Def Leppard and all that stuff. Some of the big names, but just, I don't really put that on though. I tend to go with a little bit more obscure stuff and things that I consider to be more classic '80s as opposed to overall classic rock. '80s had a particular fun beat to it. Anyway, so that's what we've been all about, and we're gonna talk a little bit some of the science when we get back. But I'm gonna leave right now. First off, with one of my all-time favorite bands from the early 80s. I believe this was a 1981. Well, the Judies, I can remember, they had two of them. They had Washerama and they had Moo with their two albums. I think one was in 81, one was in 85. But this is Ghost in a Bikini, one of my favorite 80s bands, the Judies. So check it out, and we'll be back in a sec. Ghost in a Bikini by the Judies. You know, now that, you know, I have the Judies on vinyl and then you got them on cassette. But now it's YouTube. Actually, you know what? Go get a good recording of it. I saw the whole Washerama album is up on YouTube now. A lot of the Moo album is up on YouTube. And get yourself some better recordings of it. Check them out. They're just fun songs. fun songs. Remember, they're kind of 80s. 80s American punk, actually, is what I would say they are. Fun band. Love them. All right. You know, I actually got a little bit more business to go over since we are kind of reintroducing my FSHD. In addition to being an academic for lab, I also have the hat of having a company. So I do have a for-profit company that I founded with Takako Jones and Carice Hameda called Renogenics. It originally was called EpiSwitch, but we got hit with a trademark lawsuit. EpiSwitch COVID test, really? Whatever, it just didn't feel like fighting it. Not worth the time and the money to fight it, so we just switched our name to Renogenics, Inc., based in Reno, Nevada, a spinout company of our lab from UNR. And the goal of this is to bring CRISPR inhibition gene therapy and our small molecule technology to clinic, as well as developing some other technologies. Other people on our board of directors, Dr. Stephen Tapscott at Fred Hutch Cancer Center and Dr. Sylvain Vandermeerel at Leiden University Medical Center. Honestly, probably the two best minds in FSHD. Stephen with his molecular mechanisms, understanding gene regulation, muscle gene regulation, just immunology, gene therapy, just one of the great minds in muscle research, neuromuscular disease, and actually cancer too. And then Sylvain Vandermeerel, Leiden University Medical Center, is really the home of FSHD genetics, epigenetics, and just, you know, early groundbreaking work coming out of there and continuing. And oddly enough, these two groups work together on the seminal 2010 paper, Unifying Theory of FSHD, that really nailed down DUX4 and the polyadenylation signal in the permissive alleles as being causal for FSHD. And so we're really happy that they're on. But I just want, you know, to keep in mind, so we do have this for-profit arm. And the reason we set this up is, again, this has got nothing to do with my FSHD, but I just want you to know my background so you understand, you know, we want to be an open book on, you know, you can think about, you know, what we say, maybe, you know, you should always understand the potential motivations of people when they're speaking, whether it's a foundation trying to shake you down for money or me just talking about therapeutic space. I try to be unbiased. I try to just give my opinion, but, you know, we do our best. Of course, we're biased, quite honestly, towards CRISPR inhibition because one of the reasons we work on it, not just we invented it, but we actually believe it is one of the better ways to get to a permanent therapy for the disease, but it's not going to be for everybody. That's why I do small molecules. But we got into this because really, if you want to take your technology to clinic, there's really only two ways if you're an academic lab, okay? If you want your technology to go, you can just license it out to a biotech or pharma company and hope that they take care of it and do it right and get it to clinic. Or you have to start a spin out really and try to do it yourself as long as you can until the venture caps and the money takes over and you lose decision-making capabilities. But hopefully you can get it far enough along that your vision is taken care of. And then, you know, variations in between and different, you know, it comes down to funding. Clinical trials are incredibly expensive. R&D is incredibly expensive. And people don't just give you the money for the hell of it, you know, and so you got to do something. So that's what we chose to do. We've had a number of bad experiences. And, you know, kind of the side hat I've worn is I've been a consultant and a scientific advisor for a lot of the biotech in the space and of FSHD therapeutics. And what you learn is you can, when you advise companies, that's all what you do. You're providing advice and they can ignore you, which is fine. You know, it's their business, their money, their technology. So anyway, we just feel that really, that this really has legs to it. And we want to make sure that our vision of how it should be done is carried out to the best that we can. So that's why we started Renogenics. It is, we're funded, kind of in a unique way. And, we are set up so that the return on investment is, to actually have a successful therapeutic in clinic. Okay, we're not in it to turn over profit. We're in it to cure the disease. Now, curing a disease or even therapy for disease is always good business. I just don't like the idea that you can make a lot of money or any money if you don't actually provide something with that's beneficial for the community. But if you listen to previous podcasts, you'll know that's not always the case. Anyway, just want to put that out there that we have that other arm. So academics, running also a not-for-profit, and also as a for-profit. So we have multiple hats. And just to be clear on the not-for-profit status, back December 31st of 2022, I actually voluntarily dissolved the official 501c3 not-for-profit status of myfshd.org. Because as I had mentioned, we don't raise money. We've never raised money. It's just about education and information. So it just was costing me a lot of lawyer fees. I had to file taxes every year. And I just thought, well, it just seems to be the money sink. I can do everything I want to do, which is educate people, without opening myself up to potential lawsuits of people saying that we're misusing a nonprofit. Even if you don't make money, you could, by the fact that, you know, a nonprofit, people might be upset. In fact, we know that people are upset with some of the things that I say. The truth hurts, folks. But the truth will set you free too. And so, you know, just actually relieve some of the liability as well. Now it's just me. Actually, my board isn't have to worry about liability for anything that I say. And honestly, I don't worry about liability for anything I say because we don't say anything that's not true. On the rare occasion when I've said something that was incorrect, we've corrected it. I mean, it wasn't because we said it knowingly incorrect. It's what there's been a couple things I've corrected it. But for the most part, we just tell you how it is. And remember, there's my opinions, my experiences, and I let you know when it's a fact, Jack. Which is most of it. So we're putting it out there because we believe it. When we're critical, we want to fix things, make things better. And when people are doing a great job, we always give props. You know, our favorite foundations. I'm going to have some good news about the Chris Carino Foundation coming up in the next couple of weeks. They're always on top of it. They're always doing a good job. You know, we love Friends of FSH Research in Seattle. You know, FSHD Canada, Neil Camarda up in Calgary, another one of our favorite foundations. FSHD Global Research Foundation with Bill Moss, Natalie Cooney, Emma Weatherly in Australia. Fantastic, spreading out to New Zealand and to Singapore. They're really doing an amazing job getting clinical trial ready. So, you know, we love a Brayfew in Brazil, and you know, we work with a lot of really motivated individuals all around the world. I'm trying to bring research, testing, and information to everybody. So you know who our favorites are because of good experiences, and you know who we're just going to leave out. All right, you know what? I'm going to have one more. You know, I couldn't help it. Oh, man, I love the 80s. I love here's one more song. Short song. It's only a minute. Short song. You got to remember it. You got to remember it. Come on. If you're a boomer like me, you got to remember it. And then we're going to get to some new science news. All right. Here we go. You guys know this one.
Hey, Stevie, what the hell are we beating around the bush for? This is 1982. Let's get right to the point. Huh? Here, take it from the tops. Swing it, Stevie, with a bounce, baby. You are black, I am white, life's an Eskimo pie. Let's take a bite, that was groovy thinking, Lincoln, when you set them free. We all know, cats are the same, Maine to Mexico. Good, bad, guys and chicks.
I am dark and you are light.
You are blind as a bat and I have sight. Side by side you are my amigo. Negro, let's not fight.
Ebony and good. Ivory, just living in perfect harmony.
We're talking salt and pepper. Whoa. Sammy and Dean. Stevie and me are peachy keen.
You are white.
You are black. And the who cares? Who cares, baby?
All right. You know, back in the 80s, Joe Piscopo, Eddie Murphy, classic Ebony and Ivory Stevie Wonder song, right? There was a time when that actually would have been considered actually a good sentiment. Imagine that, you know, race doesn't matter. Everyone's equal. It's all cool. Now, well, times have changed, right? I would say, unfortunately. I grew up, that's how I grew up, that went to a very integrated high school, integrated schools, integrated junior high. We just had friends from all walks of life, all races, all religions, and nobody cared. That was actually kind of cool, right? Treat everyone the same, everyone with respect and dignity. And, well, at least according to the training that they force upon us here at in the academic world, world, treating everybody equally with dignity and respect is now frowned upon. But I don't want to go down a political craziness, but pretty sure MLK would be considered a white supremacist by today's standards in the U.S. Those of you outside the U.S., I don't know how crazy your countries are, but batshit crazy is the name of the day in the U.S. Anyway, we're going to talk some science. Some of it is batshit crazy too. Speaking of that. And again, remember, I don't know what the hell is that. What's the proper term? That's going to be my catchphrase. You'll understand it. Don't worry. There's something coming out on the big screen that you'll catch it. Anyway, so it has come to my attention that that Avidity, our previous podcast was on Avidity's upcoming clinical trial. It's a phase 1/2 safety and tolerability trial, not an efficacy trial. That is going to, my friend Dan Perez called me up and he was like, holy cow, they're not going to know the results of this for 2 years. And that's phase 1/2. Yeah, results in 2 years, right? This is why I've brought up the point of timelines being idiotic to promise if you're trying to be truthful. They're great to promise if you're trying to shake people down for money. These are just real timelines. It takes a while. FSHD is a slowly progressing disease. And you want to get as much data as you can out of these clinical trials. But I guess Avidity had a Zoom session or something like that online that a lot of people attended, and I've not seen it, but based on the questions that people have brought to me, I have no interest in seeing it, frankly. I just want to make some clarifications out there. One of the questions came up on, evidently it was brought up, and if it's not true, it doesn't matter. I'm not being critical of them. I'm just clarifying something. A question about our mouse model for FSHD. First off, so if you look back in episode, one of the early episodes, Making of an FSHD Mouse Model, Takako and I discuss our efforts to make the FlexDux4 FSHD-like transgenic mouse model, which is used by labs all around the world, academic, biotech, pharma, to test anti-DUX4 therapeutics. It can be DUX4 mRNA or DUX4 protein therapeutics. That's really what these are designed for. It is a tamoxifen-inducible mouse model, meaning that if you have the proper double transgenic with a mouse model, you can inject tamoxifen and induce DUX4 expression, and you can control how much you induce it and when you induce it and all this. So basically, it's great in that sense because you can check in vivo in an animal model to see if you're a potential therapeutic work. And this is what Avidity used, and many people use to test therapeutic, their antisense. And the reason you use it is because you have a very large therapeutic window in a very short amount of time because of the DUX4 induction, okay? Now, this is not FSHD. This is testing if your therapeutic works in vivo to knock down DUX4 in an animal model where you can assess treadmill running, you can assess function, you can assess muscle strength, you can assess all these things, and you can show pretty accurately that you are able to get target engagement and get a functional readout, okay? But, you know, as was evidently pointed out in the seminar and is true, this is not how FSHD is, right? FSHD is a slowly progressing disease of low levels of DUX4 that is sporadically and mosaically expressed in skeletal muscle with accumulated damage over time. Okay, so it is not, you know, 20% of your muscle cells expressing a ton of DUX4, as is what can happen when you induce the mouse model with tamoxifen. It is 0.1% of your muscle cells expressing DUX4 over your lifetime, leading to muscle damage. And the mistake was, evidently, at least brought to my attention, was that there was a comment that said the mouse model is not good for that. And this, I would, you know, let me just to be clarified, the mouse model is perfect for that. In fact, the mouse model actually, if that is what you want to do, if that is what they wanted to do, this will be an example of why you need to get better advice from your scientific advisors. Because whoever the hell they are, you know, it's not us. And I will tell you, I can't always tell you who I work with, but I can tell you absolutely without question, we have never consulted for Avidity. They've never asked us anything that I'm aware of, that I can remember at least. If they did, they would have known that if that's what they want to do, is to test their therapeutic, their antisense, in something that actually recapitulates the gene expression profile of FSHD, you just got to use the mouse model correctly. Okay, in fact, that is the mouse model my lab uses all the time. You say, well, it sounds like the same mouse model. If you don't add tamoxifen, if you have a double transgenic, the FlexDux4 mouse mated to the Acta1 Mercury-Mer, which is the Mercury-Mer is the recombinase that is tamoxifen inducible. So you take the mouse that has the DUX4 transgene in its genome and you cross it, mate it to a mouse that has a genetic recombination protein that is tamoxifen inducible, you end up with a double transgenic mouse, and that's the one everyone uses, that has tamoxifen inducible expression of DUX4, of human DUX4. Okay. But it's a leaky model. And if you look in the 2020 paper called that we published with a tunable mouse model for FSHD that they reference in their report, if you actually look, what you see is that in the absence of tamoxifen, it is a spectacular low leaky expression, okay? Nothing's really tight, nothing's perfect. I mean, genes are never fully off and, you know, I mean, it's really hard to turn things off, really hard to keep things out of the nucleus. And so the double transgenic mouse is actually just like FSHD in its gene expression profile. It expresses a very low number of cells, has a very low number of cells expressing DUX4 only in skeletal muscle, which makes it very different than the Kaiba mouse, and over the course of their lifetime with slowly accumulated damage. So actually at 6 months, you're starting to get a pretty good phenotype. At a year or 18 months, they really look a lot like FSHD, at least as much as a mouse will. They don't have as much fat infiltration. I mean, the pig is a much better model, but that's a different story. But as much as a mouse can actually look like FSHD, low levels of chronic mosaic expression of DUX4. And this actually is the model that I would recommend using if you really want to know if your therapeutic could actually work in FSHD, because it gets to the fundamental question of antisense. This is a question I've had in respect to antisense since it first came out in 2011, okay? We know that antisense works. We know, I mean, it's just been since Craig Mello and Andy Fire did the experiment that won the Nobel Prize, you know, back when was that, early 90s. Okay, RNAi works, antisense works, it knocks down mRNA. The question is not, does it work? The question is, can you dose a mouse or really a person, or a pig, but really a person at a level for an FSHD that is not toxic, that is actually has efficacy. And because FSHD is different than these other diseases that everyone else works on, it's actually an open question. I think that is the number one question facing the antisense field. Okay, myotonic is different. Duchenne is different. Congenital, all these other things are different. In FSHD, what you truly have, you have very few cells expressing a lot of DUX4. Okay, when you hit them with antisense, you got to get it into all the cells. You can't get 50% of the cells, you can't get 20% of the cells, and you have to get it in at a level that is high enough to take care of and knock down a large amount of DUX4. So you have 1 in 1,000 cells expressing a boatload of DUX4, but all 1,000 cells have to be loaded up with antisense, okay? Because sporadically, these things are going to be turning on and turning off, okay, with DUX4. And so it has to be there, because if it's not there and you start losing, you know, then you start the path of destruction. Okay. So that is not what was tested, but that is exactly what our mouse model is set up to do, right? There's two ways to use the mouse model. One, use it the way they did, tamoxifen-inducible DUX4, express a ton of it, and you show that your antisense actually works. They're able to prevent DUX4 expression. They can maintain treadmill running. They can maintain muscle strength, and they can stop DUX4 target gene expression. But we kind of already know that. The real question that they should have done, okay, I have no problem with what they did. I just assumed that's what the information they wanted. But the real question is, in the chronic model, if you start dosing a 5-week-old double transgenic mouse with no tamoxifen, do you prevent it from developing an FSHD-like phenotype a year from now? But no one wants to wait a year. So you can do their experiment in 2 weeks. But in our lab, the way we use the mouse, we actually never treat with tamoxifen. All we ever do is we have a whole huge colony of aged models. We can always get it. We need a dozen, you know, year-old mice. We got them. Because these are the appropriate model, okay? These are the models that have very few number of cells expressing a large amount of DUX4, just like you, get worse over time as they age. It's a cumulative damage that creates the phenotype. You know, the tamoxifen-inducible one is like acute injury. It's almost like an injury model, okay? The reason it's good to use is, again, it just shows proof of principle. So if you're Alta Therapeutics, right, and you want to show that your molecule can prevent DUX4 protein from functioning in a mouse model, you can use that and show that, you know, and you'll see, because you get a big therapeutic window, you can do a really short time. But the real question also for them and their therapy approach will be, can you get enough of it in and keep it chronically at high enough levels for it to be available when a myonuclei suddenly is activated and expresses DUX4, when it's sitting there for a year not expressing DUX4, okay? Can you get the dosing high enough in 100% of the cells, you know, so that they're capable of knocking down the DUX4 protein or mRNA in the 1% of cells that are expressing it? That's the question. That is a different dose. And that is not information you get from the myotonic dystrophy trial. The myotonic dystrophy trial, if you get 5% of the cells, you know, you can have 100% of the cells with a 5% dose, you get that therapeutic benefit. Duchenne, same thing, because you're adding, you know, if you make a little bit of dystrophin because a few cells have a little bit of dystrophin made because a little bit of exon skipping is going on, you get therapeutic benefit, not FSHD, okay? That is the deal. So that's really the question. And when they say, gee, the mouse model can't do that, well, they're wrong. If that's what they said, they're wrong. This is why you need better advice. Man, this is why you need better advisor. This is why most of the companies come to us to ask how to properly use the mouse model, because I'm more than happy to tell people, you know, what do you want to do? Is that what you want to do? Great. Okay. Again, if you just want to show that your molecule works in vivo, which is what they did, and that's the right use of the model, just show that it works in a mouse, that's fine. You want to show that it works in FSHD, it's a different experiment. And you know what? Instead, they're going to be doing an experiment on you, okay? And so to me, the question still remains, can you get a high enough dose, okay? Now, what they had said is that there was no upper limit of toxicity in the non-human primate. Well, I don't know what dose they went to, and I don't know if the dose that they went to is high enough. But the other thing to keep in mind is that this is an antibody oligo conjugate, okay? A lot of focus is on the oligo, which is the target sequence, which could trigger a toll-like receptor response due to sequence, okay? That's one concern. Although that tox likely comes out in primates, but you never know, humans are a little bit different. But the other concern is, how much can you put in? The antibody is fused to it. So they're going to be putting a ton of antibody fused to their oligo into it. At some point, you hit an upper limit because this is going to be a rapid infusion of antibody, immunoglobulin, into your serum. What does that do? Well, there is the potential that there could be problems, okay? And so there is, I do not believe there is unlimited upper limit. At some point, you're going to hit a limit where enough, you can't put any more immunoglobulin into the serum, into the system. Okay, there will be an upper limit, in my opinion, I believe. I would be, if I'm wrong, I'd be happy to have them tell me that there's no upper limit. I would be shocked, because I think that biology and other clinical trials say that there is an upper limit of immunoglobulin that can be put in before you start giving people strokes. Okay. Maybe that's an underlying condition and that's what somebody can screen for. Maybe they can screen for that sort of thing. I don't know. But anyway, that's it. I just want some clarification on that. Okay. Mouse model actually is great. Has different uses. You need to understand the models you're working for. Companies, this is the difference between some of these things. When I say the devil's in the details, small detail, use the model right to do what you want. If that's what you wanted to do, you should have done it. All right. So on to the next one that's been brought to my attention. My friend Rich sent to me this announcement from Vita Therapeutics. Okay. And I got yeah, it's about cell therapy, which it's an interesting thing. It's I look at it, it's more of a, to me, in my opinion, it's more of a cell therapy for FSHD. I'm all for muscle building, different approaches. It's kind of it's a type of therapy that you need after you shut down DUX4, after you stop the destruction. And I look at this as, it should be one of many backup plans. I'm gonna give you my take on it real quick. In one sec.
What's your contingency plan?
Contingency plan?
Your backup plan. You gotta have some kind of backup plan, right?
No, we don't have a backup plan. This is it.
And this is the best that you can, that the government, the U.S. government, can come up with. I mean, you're NASA, for crying out loud. You put a man on the moon. You're geniuses. You're the guys that think his shit up. I'm sure you got a team of men sitting around somewhere right now just thinking shit up and somebody backing them up. You telling me you don't have a backup plan? That these 8 Boy Scouts right here, that is the world's hope? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, I can't help. I always thought Armageddon was on last night. And I was thinking of this thing about V-Day Therapeutics came through, and stem cell therapy just in general, I kind of think, you're like, really, that's what you got? That's your idea? But on the other hand, actually a little bit crazy sometimes. Every once in a while, crazy gets you there. And it's not actually that crazy. It's actually, for me, it's actually not crazy at all, really. It's just, it's more of a, there's a number of hurdles that need to be overcome. And, their program's proprietary. I'm not a consultant for them. They are Catherine Wagner's company, and I can't believe that they would ask for our help. We'd help anybody, but that would be an interesting thing. Anyway, let's just say, but cell therapy in general has some issues. And the first issue is, something that is going to be the fact that FSHD is different from other neuromuscular diseases. And we've talked about this before, because it's dominant negative disease, as opposed to these other muscular dystrophies that are essentially recessive, right? Which means if you add, so for the recessive disease, like a limb girdle or a Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and I say recessive in the way that in their mechanism, meaning that these are diseases where they are missing a protein that is needed for muscle function. And so if you add back that protein, that gene, and you can restore some muscle function, you start restoring it even very low percent, 1%, 2%, you start seeing actually functional benefit, 3% to 8%. I mean, there have been articles written in the New York Times, about the spectacular effects of, like 3.5% or 7% increase in dystrophin. Woo, people are dancing in the streets, not the kids who have it, but maybe the researchers selling it. You can get benefit. And so this gets back, and FSHD is different. FSHD is, you are producing something that's essentially toxic, something that's bad. And, muscle cells, the thing to remember, muscle cells are syncytial, which means that they fuse together, okay? So they're not a whole bunch of individual cells. You talked about individual cells. Think about actually more myonuclei, the nucleus of a cell, it contains the DUX4 gene, right? There's a bunch of different myonuclei that express DUX4, and that mRNA goes out into the cytoplasm. So, you know, conceptually, you just need to, we talk about a cell, a muscle cell has multiple myonuclei in a muscle fiber, muscle cell, that share a cytoplasm. And so the mRNA or a therapeutic getting into that space, you know, could potentially affect all the different myonuclei and all the different cells. So getting back to the avidity thing briefly, you know, so you could make the case that, you know, if you just have to target, when you say targeting all the cells, you got to load up the cytoplasm of all these syncytial cells with antisense in order for, because one nucleus goes here, one nucleus goes there, to express DUX4. It's not really clear how much this spreads throughout the fiber, but you just have to be ready for it. Here, the deal is you're going to have cell therapy where you're going to basically inject muscle satellite cells, muscle stem cells, essentially, to build muscle. And they are going to fuse with existing muscle. And that existing muscle in you, if you have FSHD, potentially expresses DUX4 or has DUX4 mRNA or DUX4 mRNA. Now, again, there's a lot of healthy muscle in you, but it all has the potential to become FSHD DUX4 expressing muscle. Okay, it's all genetically FSHD. So it gets, it's a little bit different because if you're doing cell therapy for limb girdle muscular dystrophy, like for example, limb girdle, it's like a calpinopathy where you're missing calpain. You know, it's a key protease that's important for muscle function. And you take muscle stem cells and you add back in, you know, genomes that have an intact calpain gene and are expressing calpain. Now you've added back something functional to an environment that was missing something, and you start to get benefit likely right away. And you probably don't even have to be that efficient because you fuse and it's going to spread throughout. And it's actually been shown for dystrophin that you fuse a little bit of dystrophin in one part of a myofiber does spread pretty good throughout the fiber. So you don't need to get 100% restoration. Now for FSHD, you know, this is our kind of our bucket of paint analogy that we use. Now FSHD, if you have a black bucket of paint and you drop in a few white buckets of little white drops of paint, you still have a bucket of black paint. Right, because FSHD muscle is potentially, and depending on how further along the line you are, the more unhealthy environment you have, the more toxic environment you have, the more DUX4 you have, DUX4 target genes are on, the effects of expressing DUX4 are going throughout the muscle fiber, the immune response is coming in. So you have a whole bunch of bad stuff going on. And if you drop a few, you know, healthy stem cells into that environment, it's a different beast. You're likely going to convert those to unhealthy. You know, it's actually, that's what I mean by dominant. The environment converts the stem cell that fuses in, as opposed to the limb girdle or the Duchenne or the myotonic, where it's reversed, where the healthy stem cell can convert the unhealthy muscle fiber. Okay, so you think about that as, you know, going the opposite, essentially the, you know, a different type of situation. Now, so what's going on with this V-Day Therapeutics? Okay, so they've announced, what did my friend Rich sent this to me, and said, hey, can you comment on this? And so it says, participate in a research study on muscle regenerating treatment for FSHD, V-Day Therapeutics. So they're looking for some patients. So what's going on? So this is actually not a clinical trial. This is a participating in research. So what's going on? Again, I don't consult for them. And so I'm going to give you my scientific take. I understand some of their technology, the non-proprietary aspects of their technology. And I'll tell you what's going on. Think of it this way. It's kind of like, you know, they're giving you what they want you to know. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, but I just kind of want to dissect it a little bit and make it maybe more accessible to understand what, at least in my opinion, what I believe is going on. Now you're gonna say, why are you talking about something you don't know about? It's like, well, you know, I know about cell therapy, and I understand the big picture of what they're trying to do. The details, actually, I won't get into details because while the details do matter, they're proprietary, and I actually don't know the details. And the details don't matter for this particular thing. I just want to kind of explain the big picture of what's going on, okay? So I've talked a little bit then about what cell therapy is. Now, this is an autologous cell therapy, okay? So what they mean by autologous is that they are going to put in the stem cells that they're going to put into you are yours, okay? So they're from you. This way, they're not going to be rejected. This is totally different from what's going on when people go to China or Mexico or other countries and get a stem cell injections. Those are umbilical cord stem cells or placental stem cells from another person. And they just get injected into you. And those stem cells are just kind of cranking out growth factors and anti-inflammatories and stuff. And eventually they're going to get wiped out. They're not fusing to make muscle. They're not building muscle. In fact, it's not clear that they're actually doing anything. In fact, there's some indications that it might be more of an indication of what's mixed with those cells is what's giving you an effect. But regardless, that's a totally different thing. The point of this is to create a large population in the lab of your cells, your stem cells that came from you, and put them back in you after they're fixed. Okay, so that's why I said, well, you know, when we say, are they going to fix the root cause of the disease? Well, sort of. They're going to fix the disease in the cells that they're going to use. They're not fixing the disease in your body as you know, the recipient, okay? And now maybe that'll be fixed by someone else. Maybe that'll be fixed by CRISPR inhibition. Maybe that'll be fixed by losmapimod. Maybe that'll be fixed by antisense, whatever. So there's the potential that they could be going into someone's face. But the idea here is these cells are going to build back muscle. Totally different than getting umbilical cord stem cells and placental. So the idea is that these cells are going to get you back your strength and get you back some muscle mass. That's the idea. That's the plan, as I understand it. So how are they going to do it? Not clear, but how is this done in the field? Where there are two ways that people can do this. They will either take a skin biopsy, which is kind of the old school way of doing it, or blood cells, your white blood cells, your lymphocytes, okay? And they are going to reprogram them, deprogram them, de-differentiate them into stem cells. This is the iPSC. This is induced pluripotent stem cells. This technology was developed, 10 plus years ago. It was going to cure every disease out there, stem cell technology, because you can basically make stem cells from non-stem cells. You can deprogram the Yamanaka factors that get put in. And now there's actually there's all sorts of ways to do this now, a million ways to do it. And you end up with a cell that can, that's what's a stem cell. A stem cell then is a cell that can be then driven to become almost any other stem cell type, almost any other. If it's totipotent, it can become anything, including germ cells and eventually sperm and eggs, but these typically aren't that far back. There are stem cells that can become nerves, they can become muscle, they can become liver, they can become whatever, if you know how to properly drive them down that pathway. And so the idea here, so this way, presumably, now you can do this for muscle biopsies as well. It's kind of a strange thing to do. But and you can basically start almost anywhere you want. Traditionally, people have started with fibroblasts. More recently, people start with blood cells. So all you would need, so it doesn't matter either way, a blood draw likely is going to be what's going to be. And so that's easy, right? A little bit of blood, get some white blood cells. The reason it's white blood cells, those have a nucleus. Your red blood cells don't have any genetic information. So the small little, your buffy coat of your immune cells, those actually have the genome. And then you can now work on them in the lab. Okay, ex vivo, you're going to work on them. So what are you going to do? I would expect what they are going to do, and they don't actually specifically say it in this thing, but I'm pretty sure what they're going to do is try to fix the defect. I mean, why not, right? You have the cells in the lab, FSHD, so you can maybe edit the polyadenylation signal and go from a permissive, everyone who's got FSHD has a permissive chromosome, right? You can make it non-permissive by destroying the polyadenylation signal. Sylvia Vandermeer's lab has already published on how to do this in the lab. It's not very efficient, but it doesn't need to be efficient. If you're doing it in the lab, it can actually be, these technologies don't need to be very efficient because you will then find the few cells that have had the editing successful, and then you grow those up, right? You can, because they're stem cells, they can actually be they can replicate almost indefinitely, right? If you do it right, hopefully. And that's the one of the tricks of stem cell, one of the secrets of stem cell work is how to grow them in the lab and maintain their stem cellness. But again, there's a lot of experience on that. My guess is they know how to do it, or they wouldn't be in business. So they're a pretty well-funded company. So they probably can know how to do this pretty well. And so they're going to be able to, so likely, I would expect that they're going to make the FSHD cells no longer, your FSHD cell, whoever volunteers, whoever they choose as the volunteers, but only five patients are going in, they're going to take your cells, fix it so they no longer express DUX4, and then amplify those populations to very large quantities, again, somehow using their proprietary technology, probably this VTA-120 stuff, repair and regenerate healthy muscle in you, if you're one of the volunteers. Now, it's only the people that they pick are going to be in the first in human study, right? Because it's got to be your cells that take from you. 2 years later, they're going to put them back after they've done a bunch of stuff. Okay, fixed them. Okay. Now, in that time, I mean, I don't know what's going on, but and then they're going to do an intramuscular injection. And it's just going to be a safety and tolerability study because that's the first thing you do. Okay. So they're these first five, you're not going to suddenly get a muscle back, right? They're not going to give you back a bicep. They're not going to give you back. They're going to inject your cells back in to see what happens, you know, because it's going to fuse to your existing muscle. And is your body going to tolerate it? Is it going to have any adverse effect? And they'll probably also be able to find out if you get any sort of benefit. The idea is, from the results of this experiment, you go on to a larger study based on what you've learned. First thing, though, is you got to do safety and tolerability. And so that's what they're going to do. So it's, cell therapy, again, it's, I'm glad people are working on it. I believe that, to me, that's part two of a cure. Part one is stop the destruction. Part two is build your muscle back. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. And, what are the limitations? Again, I don't know their proprietary technology, but I would say these are the limitations for anybody doing cell therapy for FSHD. First off is, you're adding white paint to a black bucket and hoping that it actually it turns white, right? Beyond that, what's going on? Well, really, traditionally in muscle satellite cell biology and studies, it is really hard to amplify these in the lab and maintain their stem cellness. The other part is for any sort of cell therapy is when you grow large, they're going to use a huge number of cells are going to need to be grown up in order to do this. And when you do that, you tend to select for cells that grow fast. You tend to often select for cells that are kind of weird. Actually, that's kind of what cancer is, gotta tell you, right? Those are the weird cells that grow fast and they take over, right? The slow-growing cells don't become cancer, right? So I'm not saying that they're giving you cancer by any stretch. Don't say that. I'm just saying that you can actually, as cells replicate and replicate and replicate, they can accumulate mutations. There's always a rate of which cells, spontaneous mutation in cells. And what you start with and what you end up with after many, many, many cell divisions is not necessarily the same. And you may not know if it's good or bad. It's going to be different, and it's going to be different for everybody. Okay, so whatever happens, it'll just be because it's random. Okay, typically any changes that are accumulated, whether they're epigenetic changes, a great example of this actually would be the lymphoblastoid cell lines that our lab put into Coriell repository. We put 118 lymphoblastoid. These are immortalized white blood cells from 118 volunteers, half of which are FSHD, half are control. And they're immortalized. So they can be cultured forever. And so they've been cultured and cultured and cultured and grown, divide. And you know what? Their epigenetics are really weird because you select for cells that grow really well, potentially can survive DUX4 expression, might even select for cells that have aberrant methylation, and all sorts of things happen. And, you know, so the concern might be that these are the same thing. You could have some culturing artifacts. Now, I don't know. Maybe they've addressed this. They got a way to address it. I don't know if you do genome sequencing before you put this in, whatever. But one of the things you're going to have to do in any cell therapy, and again, I'm not saying this is specific to Vita Therapeutics, I'm just anybody doing cell therapy in the clinic. You also got to grow these cells without any animal products. And you might be saying, yay, because you're vegan or something like that. That's no animal products. You know what? The way that, you know what? You're an animal. I don't know if they're going to do this in serum-free cultures or somehow some sort of human serum or what, but they're going to be, at least the technology I'm aware of, you often grow these things in order to get in past FDA compliance and to do things under GMP standards to be put into a person for human for clinical trial. You have to grow the cells under very strict conditions, which again could alter their state. Right? You just won't grow. They're kind of wonky in the way they're being grown. Okay, and then they're going to go be plugged into a person when and the condition is going to be very different. You just don't know. But that's also the point of doing the trial on people, right? Is to figure this out. Meanwhile, of course, they're actually doing this. I'm sure they're doing this. My understanding is for LGMD and for other conditions. So this is not their lead indication. And so they're going to get a lot of information about their technology from these other indications. And so maybe this won't be a problem by the time FSHD comes up. But just a potential. I'm not saying it is a problem. It's a potential problem. The other thing is delivery. And it says intramuscular injection. You know, it is well known in the field that when you do intramuscular injection of stem cells, they don't go very far. You know, they pretty much stay where you put them. And so, I was talking with somebody in the field that's done this historically for many years, and he told me you need about 200 injections per square inch. Maybe it was per square centimeter. Doesn't really matter either way. You need an awful lot of injections of these things, a lot of sites of injection in order to get an actual significant population. So this is not a kind of thing where you just inject it IV and it goes to every part of your body and you just, and you're just, powered up. With these stem cells. In fact, so delivery is an issue. Now, maybe that's where they're going. Maybe that's the idea. I have heard some stem cell therapeutic researchers talk about that type of thing, about trying. I think that's the ideal, what people want to get to, is something that you could inject into the blood and have it just somehow home in on the muscle in all the right places. But remember, these things also, though, is stem cells and satellite cell injecting. This is what leads to metastasis and cancer too, right? I mean, is what happens to the very small percentage of cells that end up in the wrong place and start growing and changing, right? So that's why, again, these are potential problems. I'm not saying that this is what's going on here, but those are potential with the systemic. So intramuscular injection, safer, better. You know where it is. You know where to look. They can inject them and come back and see what happened to them. Are they still there? Are they present? Did they when they fuse to the FSHD muscle? Did they die or did they? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll fix it. I don't know. Maybe having a bunch of healthy cells around will give you a focal point of healthy muscle. I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen. That's why you do the experiment. But you can, if you understand the biology, you can have some expectations. And so delivery, amplification. These are some of the concerns. And then the underlying, not fixing the underlying pathology in the recipients. That is probably why, if you look at the actual criteria, 18 to 65, confirmed FSHD 1 or 2, able to walk on flat ground without braces. And why would that be the case if they're just doing an IM injection? Well, because probably that means you're not that affected. Okay. The environment that they're going to be injecting to likely is going to be pretty healthy to start with. All right. So who needs this the most? Well, those of you in wheelchairs, those of you that can't walk, those of you can only walk for a couple minutes before sitting down. That's who needs this more than anybody. But who they're going to give it to are the people who are doing pretty good, because those are the most likely people to keep the healthy, because that's a healthy environment. Not a bad place to start. But again, that's a pretty low bar. Take someone who's pretty healthy, give them some cells, and see if they're still pretty healthy. But actually what they're going to do is they're going to see what happens to the cells. And that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. But the real question is, those of you who out there who can't lift your arm over your head, is this going to get you to lift your arm over your head? Those of you missing a bicep, is this going to get you your bicep back? Right? That's the promise of stem cell therapy. That is the promise of muscle build back. Is this going to get you there? Maybe eventually will, but this is where you got to start. This is where you got to start. So it's cool. It's going to be, I think, props to them for starting it up. I'm not sure about the timetable on this. Well, that's probably a timetable for the study. It's probably pretty spot on. But to me, you still have to shut down DUX4. We got to have an effective therapy. But you know what? While that's going, this is going, they're developing their technology. Other stem cell groups around the world, trust me, there's a lot of stem cell groups around the world and companies with different, they'll say they're the best, with different technology, with the idea. And then you have some non-stem cell technology. That's actually the kind of stuff we're working on. Some non-stem cell technology to try to build back muscle. Everybody, in my opinion, has got the same issue, though. You got to shut down DUX4 and stop the destruction first, okay? Now, the converse to that, the alternative, the other way to think of it, though, and my friend Neil always talks about this. He's like, if you're a ball that's losing air, he thinks of himself that way. Yeah, you lose an air. Yeah, you don't fix the hole, but if you pump you can pump it back up. And then lose air, and then pump it back up and lose air, and you just kind of, and say, that's actually fine. You know what? Pump them up a few times and you're cool, right? It's better than just continually losing air and eventually end up with a totally flat ball. And so there is, that's the way some patients think about this. And that's the way that this has been sold to the people who fund it, is that we can just pump you back up and then, buy you some time. We can buy you a couple of years and then buy you another couple of years and then buy you another couple and just keep pumping it in. It's a great business model, I got to tell you. That's what the stem cell people already are selling, right? And that's what the exosome people are selling. Now we're just keep injecting you. You got to keep coming back for more injections for every customer, except they're not doing a damn thing in those technologies. But, there is the potential for that. But again, I get to the same idea. Your muscles are expressing DUX4, they're FSHD muscles, especially if you're more affected. Plus, you have a very dystrophic environment. You have a fatty environment. You got a fibrotic environment. You're making DUX4 and DUX4 products, the effect of DUX4, the effect of the immune response. All this stuff is going on. And just throwing a bunch of healthy cells in there is just, to me, again, white drops of paint into a big black bucket of paint. But again, that's not what they're talking about here. They're talking about wetting white and dropping in some eggshell white and seeing if you're still kind of white. And I don't know which one's more pure than the other. I've been married 3 times. I got some ideas. They're looking to change a little bit off-white with a little bit of white and seeing how shade of off-white you might potentially be. Place to start. Nothing wrong with starting. You know what? If you can't fix that, then you got a problem. I guess you're better off starting there than you are starting at the other spectrum, really, with a totally black bucket of paint dropping white things. So you know what's going to happen. So props to them for going forward. I think there's some significant hurdles before this gets to clinic. But this is what I'm talking. There's a lot of stuff out there going, a lot of different avenues. They're on the books now for first in human study, second half of 2025. More power to them. More power to them. I honestly wish them the best. Be curious. There's stuff in the pig might be interesting. You'd have to have pig now. You'd have to have pig stem cells with their pig stuff and make pig thing. But you could test this out in the pig. That's why the pigs are here. That's why we're making the pigs. You could test this out systemically. You could test all day, but in the end of the day, pig's a pig and a person's a person. So, they're going into people. Maybe, Catherine had a comment once. She said, why do we bother with any animal studies at all? So many things work in animals and fail in humans. Just skip the animals, right? That was one of her comments one time she made publicly. And I'm not going to knock that comment. I would say that the reason that happens is because, first off, maybe they didn't really work in animals and people were just saw stuff through rose-colored glasses and were driven by finances and venture cap benchmarks. And if you really analyze the data, I think a lot of stuff that so-called worked in animal models actually didn't. And when you do the deconstruction of a failed clinical trial, you say, boy, we should have known this. Or you didn't do the animal study correctly, kind of like what Avidity's thing, didn't quite do the best animal study you could have done. And yeah, sometimes the answer is that a mouse is a mouse and a person's a person, and there the two shall meet. I still am a fan. I think there's a lot we can learn about the technology from good animal models. That's why we're making the pigs. Cell therapy, other type of muscle building therapy. I think the pigs are going to be ideal for that. They're not quite ready yet. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with them going ahead and doing this, getting into people. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe once people see the pigs, they'll have changed their mind.
Together, standing strong.
right. That's Starship. Man, now that is an 80s band. There you go. There's 80s music, 80s band. And it's from an 80s movie, Mannequin, 1987. Absolutely spectacular. It's actually not that great a movie. You know, some freaking Egyptian goddess is trapped in a mannequin's body and true love sets her free. There you go. That's the whole movie. But amazing outfit. You want to see what, if you don't know 80s wardrobe, check that out. Kim Cattrall. And they did it. It takes place in a department store. Mannequin, duh. With Andrew McCarthy, Brat Pack, you know, out of St. Elmo's Fire. Kim Cattrall was in Porky's. And then, of course, you know her from Sex and the City, probably more recently. But real 80s hair, 80s fashion, 80s music. Hollywood, my man, he was ahead of his time. I'm not sure what he's called, but that, you know, the LGBTQ plus whatever is repped back then before it was cool. Anyway, so check that out. That's our 80s music. Hey, as we're wrapping up here, summary of the science is going to be avidity, antisense, safety and tolerability trial, phase 1-2, going to take them a couple of years. Glad they're doing it. We know antisense works. The question with antisense is, can you dose it high enough and safely enough and to affect FSHD? We know you can for myotonic, probably Duchenne. FSHD is different. Big question on dosing. Glad they're moving forward. Antisense is, you know, it is ideal technology for FSHD conceptually, but we'll see if you can actually get efficacy in a person. The other one we talked about was V-Day Therapeutics, which really is cell therapy. You know, this is building back. So avidity is stopping the destruction putatively, which you got to do. And Vita and anyone doing cell therapy is building the muscle back. Whether you can do it without stopping the destruction, I actually doubt it, but I don't know. Maybe it depends on the case. Maybe if you're really mildly affected, it can help because you don't have that much destruction or not. I will see. But I'm glad that cell therapy is moving forward with them and a number of other groups, other academics, other companies. There's a lot of technology being developed for building muscle back. This is one of them. And again, this is a safety and tolerability trial, only 5 people. And the key here is they have to put your cells back into you. So the trial is 2025, but they need your cells now so that they can make them into stem cells, de-differentiate, so they can correct the defect in the FSHD one way or another. And then make enough of them to put them back into you to have some sort of beneficial effect. A lot of technological hurdles for cell therapy, in my understanding, my thing. Now, again, maybe they've solved some of these and we just don't know because it's proprietary. Hopefully that's the case. They're going to get solved eventually. I mean, I honestly think cell therapy at some point is going to be able to go. The biggest hurdle for me is delivery, systemic delivery. That is the biggest hurdle for me to do that safely. Get these things to all of the skeletal muscles without screwing up your other organ systems and giving you other problems. But you know, I'm a big believer that all problems get solved. Just when you just can't promise, unless you're trying to raise money, you can't ethically promise when they'll be done. Because technology, you know, sometimes you need to invent new technology, but you know, it's not smart people out there developing new stuff. And there are a lot of applications for cell therapy if you can clear these hurdles. So they're in the FSHD space, which is great. But, you know, just temper your expectations. It doesn't mean you're going to have a muscle tomorrow, right? This is 2 years before the start of a safety and efficacy trial. Okay, not efficacy, safety and tolerability trial. Okay, it starts in 2 years. Okay, you just need to have this head start. So things, you know, I know it seems like it's slow, but things are really moving. All right, I mentioned we're going to finish up. I got, you know, a lot of you guys out there I know are buying CRISPR Evolution by Carice Jones. And, you know, that's our CRISPR goddess, Carice Hameda. She invented CRISPR inhibition for FSHD. She's, you know, a professor in our group. Her scientific life is dedicated to FSHD, but super creative and an amazing writer. And so we know every time someone outside the U.S. buys a book, she's like, it must be from your podcast because she doesn't know anybody. I think when you're starting out, you feel like the only people buying your book are friends and relatives. And of course, they tell you it's great. You know, I remember growing up with one of my idiotic cousins, I guess it would be a cousin that came out like, oh, really clever dude. He wanted to be a comic book writer. So he invented a comic book called Marmalade. which was a giant female dog. And of course, if you're in the U.S., you know about Marmaduke, who was a giant male dog. Hell, nowadays Marmalade could just maybe just a Marmaduke just transitioned. I don't know, but not very clever. But you know, we all had to sit around Thanksgiving and read these stupid comic strips, and Gallimot was great. You're a genius, pal. You know, I got a ton of me and my sister, only two kids, yet six marriages. And I don't think we're stopped yet. Got a lot of paintings that have been given to us by our painter friends, as happens. And, again, you know, they're fine. There's nothing wrong with them, but maybe not something you buy, you know, but this isn't like this. Her book, I mean, you think I'm telling you this? I'm trying to tell you is it's actually quite different. CRISPR Evolution, go to CariseJonesBooks.com and look at some of the reviews on there. These are not friends. These are actually competitions, editors, people seeking her out, Book Life reviews. She got something that says a work of a genius. You know, it's just indie reader. She's one came in first place in the PNWA, which is the Pacific Northwest Writers Association for books. She placed second in all of sci-fi internationally in the Indie Book Awards. We're just racking up award after award after award for the book. And plus other people we don't know, people never heard of, just keep sending in emails, sending in posts on the Facebook and the website about, you know, one of the best books they've ever read in their life. You know, you don't be put off by the science. The science is accessible. You've heard her talk on podcasts. You know, she knows she's very creative, talks accessible science, makes my science, you know, it does way better than I do. But it's actually a story about a family, their characters, and it's a family you'll fall in love with. You might even recognize some people, sort of. In some situations, if you had listened to the whole podcast, you might recognize more than you realize, even though everything's fictitious. But great science fiction, great story, brilliant writer. And you know what? And she's the one, in my opinion, is going to be bringing one of the cures for FSHD to clinic, which is CRISPR inhibition. I have great faith in it. I think there's going to be multiple ones. I think there's going to be several of them, different ones for different people. But honestly, I think that hers is one of the best, if not the best, which is why we're dedicating our careers to it. Finally, we got Jagger. I'm telling you, that's our musician. Does our intro and exit music. Well, Jagger is just, he has been hitting it hard. In the music sense, I don't really know what he does in his spare time, but basically he's got us a worldwide premiere of his next track on our next podcast on for Rare Disease Day. He's got some of his vocals on there, and he's putting a whole album together of Jagger music, which I believe is going to be available. Will be on the web. I think Amazon. I can't remember what he said exactly, but we'll let you know where you're going to be able to get it. But Jagger is a spectacularly talented musician. I love his sound. A lot of people have commented that their favorite thing about the podcast is, oddly enough, not me. It's the music, number one. The music from Jagger, number one. My guess. And normally I don't even make the list, but that's cool. It's okay. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt, really. Anyway, we're wrapping up. I got to go remove some snow, believe it or not. I don't know, you know, God, it snows, you know, every 5 years, we get 5 years worth of water here. And then, anyway, this is that year. But anyway, come visit us. Come see us. Hey, Evan, it was great to see you. Have you stopped by the lab on your trip into Reno? We got a couple of people coming this summer by the lab. Always happy to have people. Always happy to show you the lab, answer any questions. You know, whatever. All right, heading out. Catch y'all later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. You have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.